Hello, welcome to the Intellectual Agrarian Podcast, where we learn and grow with the ideas and insights, stories and skills of farmers and agrarians from around the world. What we call philosophy from the farm. Today we are joined by Tim Young from Small Farm Nation. Together we've got an incredible interview about a recent book he's published, The One-Page Strategic Plan, a step-by-step guide to building a profitable and sustainable farm business. We'll walk through what it means to think strategically about building your farm business, how your vision and mission are essential, how to navigate distribution channels, and much, much more. This is an episode full of great practicals, so I hope you enjoy our conversation with Tim Young. Tim Young, welcome back to the show.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Since it's been a bit since we've had you on the show, would you mind giving the audience just a brief refresher on who you are and what your experience in agriculture is?
Yeah, well, I run a business called Small Farm Nation, which is a boutique marketing firm that helps farmers learn how to market their business. And I also build websites for farmers and host those websites as well. My background is really twofold. I mean, a lot of my career has been in corporate America and in startups where I started my own businesses, mainly in the high-tech space. I started a pastured livestock farm in 2006 and ran that for 9 years. And we really did two things there. One was we sold pastured protein products, you know, grass-fed beef, lamb, pork, chicken, things like that directly to customers, mainly through a CSA or through drop sites. But we also started milking cows and milked 24 Jersey cows. And from that, made farmstead cheese and sold that as well to, you know, to retailers like Kroger and Whole Foods and those kind of firms. And we sold that farm business in 2015 because our preference was to do all the farming stuff, but to do it for ourselves rather than to be commercial farmers. So we think of ourselves today as more as modern homesteaders. Having said that, we greatly miss, you know, being in that farming environment. And so the way I satisfy that need is by helping other farmers to learn the skills they need to grow their business.
Mm-hmm. And I was just remarking with someone else recently as they were ending their farm tenure, and now they're working more on helping with other farmers, that really it's kind of like that hero's journey element, where once you've completed the journey, you come back with the knowledge to share with other people.
Well, you know, if I can be perfectly honest about this, Terrence, you know, because sometimes people ask me, you know, why I'm not farming commercially anymore. And the way we liked farming was to farm direct to customers. But the one thing that's very different about farming versus any other business is you can't separate your personal life from your farm life because you live in your business. And so we had just too many experiences where there were just people driving up to our house on Mother's Day or Thanksgiving or whatever, even though we had signs up that said, you know, please, you know, come on our tour dates or whatever. And you know, as much as we absolutely adored and loved our customers, we valued our privacy. So it was that led us to say, look, we want to do all the farm stuff, but we want to do it for ourselves rather than having our life up, you know, open for everyone else. Now, I admire people like Joel Salatin and all the other farmers who say, hey, come anytime, you know, day or night, but it's just not us.
And that's really good that you make that distinction. And I think that that's one of the things we're going to get into talking your project here, the strategic plan, make that decision, commit to the choice and move forward. That's a lot of what you're talking about here. And I think it was one of Joel's more recent books. I can't remember if it was the one about growing more farmers or something like that. But he makes comment that that is not his wife's preference. And that she's like, if you want to be the face of it, sure, go ahead. I'm going to go hide. And I'm like, and that's just, not everyone has that preference for wanting to have everyone there all the time. It's good that you can make that decision on who you are and what your goals and aims are, and then go with it. So getting into the one-page strategic plan, you've recently published this. It's the One-Page Strategic Plan, a step-by-step guide to building profitable and sustainable farm business. My first question is, what prompted the project? Obviously, you've got experience with startups. You know how this stuff works, and I think you're presenting business stuff to farmers, which tends to lack. But what was the what was your inspiration for doing this project?
Well, you know, there's a lot of amazing farm businesses out there, and I think that we all know about them, the ones that are really growing and they're creating a great presence. And a lot of people are envious of them and say, well, I want to be like that business. But in my experience with Small Farm Nation Academy, which is a membership site I have where I work with a lot of farmers, And in having my podcast as well, I talk to a lot of people and find that they don't approach farming as a business. And here's the thing that happens. Farming is a very unique, you know, enterprise, if you think about it, Terrence. I mean, there are so many people that accidentally become farmers because they start as a gardener or they start keeping a few chickens and, you know, then they've got a few more and we might as well sell some. And then they create a nice little hobby business, but they never started with the intent of creating a farm business. Now think about it this way. Let's say that I like, you know, folding clothes. I'm not going to become a hobby dry cleaner. I mean, if somebody wants to get into the dry cleaning business, they're going to say, wait a minute, where am I going to get traffic for this business? What are the profit margins for this business? How will I price it? Who are my competitors? What are the alternatives? All of those kind of strategic issues that you think about. Farming is absolutely unique in that regard, that people can kind of step into it without having a plan. Once they step into it, what I find is they never go back and create that plan. They just kind of keep going and making adjustments. So the inspiration that I had was, and I struggled with how to create this, you know, document to help them for some time, was how can I simplify this? Mm-hmm. So I created a one-page strategic plan, which takes them through 8 questions that I think are important to answer so that you at least end with knowing where your competitive advantage is going to come from. And then you can make decisions on, you know, whether or not I have this farm enterprise or that farm enterprise or which one makes the most sense. But it's just a step-by-step tool to help people make those choices.
Mm-hmm. So you said it's 8 questions. What's like the basics of a one-page strategic plan for people that...
Yeah, I mean, it's real simple. I'll walk you through the 8 questions. And look, you know, and some of these questions are intuitive, but that doesn't mean that people actually go through the work. The first question is this. What, you know, is the vision and mission box? It's why am I doing this? Okay, so it's very important that people get in any business, farming or, you know, or high tech. It's very important that people are clear on what their vision, mission, and core values are. The reason it's important is because whatever business you start, you're going to run into problems. You're going to run into customers that are not happy. You're going to run into production issues. You're going to run into lack of funding. There is going to be stress coming your way in your business. So it's critical that you're clear on why you're doing this, and that mission is allows you to push through and persevere through all the pain that's coming your way. Also, it's critical because if you don't know what your vision is, where you want to go, and the difference is the mission is why am I doing what I'm doing? Mm-hmm. Okay. The vision is what do I want this business to look like at some point in the future? Basically, that's the end state. That's what I want it to be. So you need to know what that vision is. If you don't know what the vision is, you're going to find yourself with opportunities that you think are opportunities that come along. Like, mm-hmm. should I layer on a new farm enterprise? If I'm raising chickens, should I add turkeys or rabbits or whatever? Well, you're not going to know if you should do that unless you know what your vision is and if that is consistent with where you want to get with your business. So that's what box number one is. And there's several boxes like
if
that.
I
box
can camp on that box for one quick second.
Yeah, go ahead.
That was one of the things I was so delighted to see in this, because I feel like most farmers don't think through that. They just go ahead and they do it. They don't consider what a vision or a mission is. I can easily see a farmer going, why would I care about vision or mission? How does that change the bottom line? Because... Right. Especially if they're even trying to think business-wise, they're going to assume, well, I just need to be doing the things that make money. Vision and mission, how does that make money? But you're right. So right. It allows you to focus and weed out the things that don't fit your overall plan. It just sets, right. This is what the goal is.
It's one of the curses, I think, of farming. Farming lends itself to so many enterprise opportunities. So, I mean, if you tell someone you're going to start a dry cleaning business, to go back to my earlier example, you know what that is. Okay, I'm going to have a dry cleaning business. If I say I'm going to start a farm, wait a minute, are you going to do an equestrian type of farm that maybe is therapeutic? Are you going to do an agritourism farm that's going to have weddings and events? Are you going to do a cut flower farm? Are you going to do a vegetable CSA? Are you going to do microgreens, aquaponics? Are you going to do pasture meats, you know, cheese? I mean, there's a billion of these. And to make it worse, you can start with any of them and then layer on the others later. Mm-hmm. And your business can become extremely complicated. And often that's what happens for people. They throw a little bit of this against the wall, a little bit of that against the wall, and they find themselves doing all these things. And they kind of make it move ahead a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. but not necessarily towards any coherent vision.
So what you're saying is all of the above is not the correct answer when you're looking at all the different options that you can do on a farm.
Well, all of the above is the correct answer if you want to layer a lot of complexity and never make a lot of money at anything. And you should try to make money with your farm business. People seem to be ashamed sometimes of like, well, I shouldn't charge more, whatever. This is a business that requires your capital. It requires the lost opportunity cost. It requires a ton of your time. You know, you should make choices that are going to allow you to be as profitable as possible with integrity. And what I mean by that is, you know, none of us get into farming thinking that, hey man, I got an idea to make a boatload of money farming. You know, that just doesn't usually happen. We all choose this for the lifestyle. We all want to be closer to nature and doing something that's real with our hands that we can see what we produce at the end of the day. That said, if you don't find a way to make this sustainably profitable, you won't be doing it for long. Mm-hmm.
So, sorry, I interrupted. We were on to the next of the 8 questions.
Yeah. So the next question is customer segment. So the first one is, why are you doing this? The second question is, who cares? So mm-hmm. You're starting a farm, big deal. So this is where you get into your customer segments. And I have a little bit different take here than a lot of people. A lot of people you'll hear mm-hmm. in marketing will talk about the ideal customer, and it's important to choose your avatar and ideal customer. And I think that is important in a number of industries. It really is important to start with that. It's absolute hogwash in farming. Do you think Joel Salatin started his business saying, who's my ideal customer and how do I serve them? Do you think Will Harris at White Oak Pastures started that way? None of the people I've ever interviewed on my podcast ever started that way. Here's what they do instead. What every successful farmer does is they think about what they believe in, what their core values are, and they share those. They promulgate those through blogs and through interviews and through books or whatever it may be, through media interviews or whatnot. And they talk about what's important to them. Now, of course, this comes from your vision, mission, and core values, which is in box one. But if you get clear on that and you go out there and champion that, then guess what will happen? You will attract a tribe of people who share your values, and those people will become your customer segments. And you'll find that they will cross the demographic and psychographic spectrum. They will not all look like one person. They will look like many people.
Well, and what I love about this idea is because what you do is instead of you hunting for a specific person, what you're really getting is you're saving yourself some legwork because it's people coming to you based on what your values are.
You're exactly right. And this is the problem that everybody runs into. How many people, I can't tell you how many farmers I've run into or other business owners that are hunting for customers. So they get to the point where they have a product. Now they got to find customers. They post something up on Facebook or on Instagram or whatever. They go to Craigslist, do a listing. They're hunting for customers. Your marketing objective is to be a magnet that attracts customers. Mm-hmm. So how do you attract customers? Customers, you know, this goes beyond farming. You know, some people are attracted to iPhones or Apple or whatever mm-hmm. because they just believe in those products or that mission or whatever or that value system.
Aesthetic
or that
design, yes.
Right, exactly. So you've got to be that in the farming world. Now, how do you get people attracted to you? They will be attracted to what you believe in. They want to trust you. They want to know what you stand for. They want to know that you're trying to bring farming back the way it used to be. You're trying to reconnect animals with the land and people with the food, as we used to say at our farm. So the only way they're going to know that, again, goes back to box one. First, get clear on it. And then later, you actually have to get that message out so people see that. When you do that, you're going to get a tribe of people that not only are attracted to you, but here's the magic sauce. They will actually become your cheerleaders and fans and spread the word for you to other people. That's what will drive your business. And you'll never have to sell again.
What I love about that idea is it reminds me of, so I've always compared farming, in my opinion, as a creative expression. And a lot of farms can do the exact same thing, but all be unique and different in their own way because the farmer themselves are different. They're bringing a different set Absolutely. Of values and ideas to it. And that's what makes me excited when I meet different farmers. They may be doing the same thing, but because the farmer themselves are different, it's why you can have different customers that will go to different farms, even though, say, farm A and farm B are the exact same in virtually every other way other than the farmer themselves.
Absolutely. It's all about the farmer. In fact, I don't really cover this in this particular book, the One-Page Strategic Plan. I do cover it. in another book that I'm writing, and also in some of my courses, about how you create a personal brand as a farmer. Mm-hmm. Again, some of the farmers I mentioned earlier have done a masterful job of this. You know who those farmers are. They're out there and they're outspoken, and you and they have their own brand. Their farm is also the brand, but it's intertwined and interwoven with who they are. These are people who take a stand. They share what they believe in. They share what their passion is. They don't care if you don't agree with them. And that's absolutely where you want to be. And this is also the place that so many people are uncomfortable. You know, take my wife, for example. When we were on the farm, she's like, I don't want to say anything that anyone would disagree with, because I mean, she's the sweetest, nicest person.
Yeah.
Whereas someone like me is like, I'm going to say what I believe. And if you don't believe, you know, this, then that's just too bad. You have a different belief. That doesn't mean that mm-hmm. we can't be friends or that we don't like each other, but you know, you have a different belief. So to build your personal farm brand, you have to take a stand. You have to be present. You have to be consistent. And most important, you've got to give people a reason to take action. They hear your stance and they go, okay, I want to be part of your vision. How do I support that? Well, you support that by buying from us. And mm-hmm. and you ask them to buy from you.
Yeah.
And you know, and you do that unashamedly, because that's how you fulfill your vision. And guess what? They fulfill their vision, you know, vicariously through you.
I don't know if you're familiar with Donald Miller and building a story brand.
Very familiar.
His book, one of the things he talks about is inviting your customers onto the journey, basically.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're talking about here. And I always love being able to see farmers do that and do it well.
Yeah, it's funny that you bring that up. I mean, he's written a few books, of course, you know, Story Brand and Marketing Made Simple, Business Made Simple. I've got his online course. I have been to his in-person workshop in Nashville. I've talked to Donald about this issue. And I think so much of what he teaches is really helpful for people. That said, just like I don't believe in the ideal customer, mm-hmm. I don't believe in Donald's concept of making your customer the hero of the story as it relates to farming. And I've written about this and I've videoed about this. And I talked to Donald about this when I was down there. Now, of course, he saw it differently because he wants to say,
it's his whole thing.
And I want to be careful how I say this, because mm-hmm. I am a fan of his, and I'd like to encourage people to read his books. I have copied some of his ideas from a marketing point of view, because he's got some great ideas. But the reason I don't agree with making the customer the hero of your story in the farming world is because of what I just said a minute ago. You've got to start with your vision and mission, and you are going to attract people. Again, I'll give you the examples that we all know about. Do you think Joel Salatin sits around thinking, how can I make the customer the hero of the story? You bought a chicken, you're the hero. No, Joel's branding is all about, I am against factory farming. I'm against industrial agriculture. I want to tell you why. I want to tell you how we can heal the land through what we're doing. I want you to be part of this story. Joel and his farm is the hero of that story. Will Harris and what he's doing for the land in Georgia are the heroes of that story. You get to be part of that story, but you're not the hero. Now, this may seem like it's semantics, but really, I think it helps farmers get clear on, yes, Tim's right, I've got to get clear on what my vision, mission, and core values are so that I can go out there and attract people to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's a really good point that you're bringing up here. And I love, you see, these are the types of things where I love it when I bring up something, because then I get to hear a different perspective. What a farm is very much a value-driven business. When we're talking small-scale farming, local farms, it is driven based on a mission. So I really like the point you're making, because again, this is why the farmer as an entity matters. When it's a faceless corporation, there's not really a front man. There's no one to like get right. behind.
That's exactly right.
Who wants to consider Joseph A. Bank or Wells Fargo as the hero of any story? Whereas having, right. say, a Tim Young, a Will Harris, a Joel Salatin as a hero in a narrative, it makes it a more interesting story.
Well, absolutely. And look, you know, you can't have here's what's different about farming versus any other business. You cannot have a farm without a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the farmer, people are going to want to know who is the person. I mean, you can have, you know, a soda manufacturer or a restaurant. I can go to Olive Garden, you know, and go, hey, I like Olive Garden. I like their, you know, lasagna or whatever. I don't need to think about, well, who's the guy that's running this? It doesn't matter to me. Just bring out the breadsticks and the salad, okay? That's what I care about. Now, with a farm, particularly as it relates to sustainable farming, and that's who my audience is. It's who your audience is. We talk to small-scale sustainable farmers. Well, so there's someone at the heart of that. And that person, the farmer, the most critical marketing thing they can do is to create a personal brand for their farm. Again, I talk about this in other books. I talk about this in courses. And they can figure out how to do this. But if you think about the farms that we all admire and like, we're thinking about that farmer, that person at the center of that who is, you know, espousing their values and their beliefs and attracting people like a magnet to them.
Mm-hmm. And we will continue talking about this far too long unless I ask you about the rest of the strategic plan.
Well, so after you've got your box one is a vision and mission. Box two is your customer segments. Okay, who cares about what you're doing? You know, then box three is, okay, well, I know, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing. I know who's going to care. I've defined my customer segments. Now, what are my revenue streams? This is where you got to make choices on what products you're going to offer and whether or not you're going to stack enterprises or not. So I walk them through. I actually created, you know, for one of my books, I created a farm product decision matrix, which is a 19-question template that you got to go through to answer these questions to determine which farm products are right for you to offer. Mm-hmm. All too frequently, what I find that we do is, hey, you know, I'm raising chickens, you know, why don't I raise some rabbits? You know, and therefore I got rabbits all of a sudden. And, you know, maybe that's a good idea, but maybe it's not a good idea. You know, so there's a process you need to go through to answer that question. After you do that, box number four gets into your channels. This is your go-to-market options, your distribution channels. Farming is exceptionally unique in this category. If you've got a dry cleaning business, here's your go-to-market channel. You know, you might have a store that people walk by, or maybe you want to target businesses and see if you can do a deal, you know, for like, you know, doing cleaning and pickups at a specific business. Farming, you know, are you going to sell at farmers markets? Are you going to have a roadside stand? Are you going to have a CSA? Are you going to do drop sites? Are you going to do, you know, shipping, which so many people like to do today? Mm-hmm. Are you going to do retailers, restaurants? Are you going to do distributors, wholesalers? You know, there's so many ways that you can go to market in farming, and you can combine those. And combining those sounds great, but just like, you know, with too many products and enterprises, it's the same thing with farming. You can really layer on operational complexities by saying, well, somebody wants me to deliver there, I'm going to deliver there now, without strategically thinking through, is that a profitable choice for me? And I'll get through in a minute when I get to the cost structure, the next box, I'll talk about how you can decide whether or not that makes sense or not. Mm-hmm. But in the channels box, this is where you've got to go through and make clear choices of, all right, here's my vision. So I know what I want to be seen as. Here are my customer segments and people I'm targeting. I know my products. Now, how am I going to get those products to those people? And so it all starts to line up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the next box is cost
structure. Hold one second. I want to ask a specific question as far as distribution channels, because so I was looking over the list and I'm like, I think I've done almost literally every one of these in my farming experience, except one. I never worked with distributors, and that's right. Something that you had experience with. I'm right. Sure that most of the audience listening right now is familiar with farmers markets, CSAs, drop right. points, but not with distributors. I was just curious if you could speak a little bit to that from your experience.
Yeah, I'd love to. And I'd actually love to share, you know, be brutally honest about sharing some of the stuff that might be interesting to your audience. Let me talk about how we got to that point. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked about in the early years, first several years, we sold through a CSA, we sold on a farm, and we did drop sites. We had a daughter born in 2012. And one of the things that was important to our vision on our farm mm-hmm. was that we all worked together on the farm and we maximized our time together. When you do that vision box number one of doing the one-page strategic plan for farmers, one of the things that's really unique for farmers is your vision is always an integrated personal and business vision. It's not like that in any other business. When I was mm-hmm. back in the Fortune 500 world, you know, nobody in corporate America cared what my personal, you know, desires were to have more family time or whatever. They cared about my vision for my division or my business. But in farming, that is important. So one of our objectives was, how do we maximize time with our daughter because we're only going to have her for, you know, X number of years, and we don't want to miss that time. So we were doing a lot of deliveries. We were doing a lot of farm tours, 100 people coming to every farm tour, showing people around, and it was wonderful, but it took a lot of time. We decided to move out of the pastured meats section and move into the farmstead cheese section. So we're milking Jersey cows. We decided to make cheese only as our product, partly because when I ran through the strategic planning process, I figured out a way to make that a more lucrative business by itself than doing all the other pastured meat stuff. So it made financial sense to do that. Then the question was, okay, how do I want to sell this? And we sold in the beginning to restaurants directly, to small distributors. We definitely still sold to individuals. We shipped cheese, you know, to all of our customers. And we also sold on the farms side as well. But we made a decision, I think maybe 2013 or so, to go not only with the distributor, but to go with one distributor. We put all of our eggs into a single distributor and went with them. As I talk about in the book, this is a very risky strategy. But I negotiated this in a contract where it was ironclad, both for them and for us. They were guaranteed to be the only way to get our cheese. And we were guaranteed for many years that they would buy 100% of our cheese. So no matter what I produced, they had to buy it. So that was a really good deal for both of us. Now, the lesson here beyond taking that channel for people is also, how can you possibly create an exit event for your farm? When we got to the point where I wanted to sell the farm, what I was selling was, well, here's a business where you've got a guaranteed contract where people will buy your cheese and the distribution is all set up. You just got to continue making the cheese. Now, to create demand for that, at this point, we had won awards at the American Cheese Society competition, the United States Cheese Championship.
You had built your brand by that point. People were familiar.
It's critical. You've got to build your brand and you've got to have demand for it. And I had some distributors and restaurants that were upset at us because they couldn't get our cheese any other way. And I hated that, to be honest, because, you know, we wanted to serve them still, but we had to make the choice that was best for our lifestyle. So that's why we made that choice. Now, that choice doesn't work as well, you know, for, you know, some types of farm products. If I'm selling pastured chicken, you know, that might not work as well. I mean, although there are ways you can do that. But if you are going to go through that choice, you got to understand you're putting a lot of your farm eggs into one basket, to use the cliche. So you need to make sure you get protection in your agreement with your distributor.
As I said, I'd had little experience, no experience with this, and I assumed most of the audience didn't. So thank you for sharing. I think that, again, this is why it's asking those questions right at the top, vision and mission, because then everything else should be dictated based on those.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, it's how I, you know, there's no rocket science here. I think anybody could do what I did in this one-page strategic plan document, but it's how I created those boxes. I mean, if you start thinking sequentially and logically about how do I want to structure any business, the way I think about it, at least, starts with, you know, what's my vision and mission? Who are my customer segments? What are my revenue streams? What are my channels? Then we get to cost structure. Now, the cost structure, what I'm really saying here for people in the farming space is two things. One is, it's very important to have a really good grasp on what your costs are so that you can price properly. And I find a lot of people really struggle with that. Like, I don't really know my production cost or whatever. But there's another element of this that I talk about in the cost structure. And I talk about who the competitive forces are and understanding those. And this really relates back to box three. How do you choose what products you want to offer? The competitive forces, we usually think about competition as, well, who's my direct competition? If I run a farm selling, farm fresh eggs, who else sells farm fresh eggs? You know, and those are my competitors in the marketplace. And for sure, those are competitors. But you also have, you know, indirect competitors. Well, people can also get eggs from a store, for example. And then you also have alternatives. Well, what's an alternative? Somebody can raise their own chicken and they don't need your eggs. You know, they can do it themselves. And then you also have you also have replacements that can come in the future. Can they buy it some other way? Now, that doesn't really relate to eggs, but in the meat world, when I was selling pastured meats 15 years ago, you know, you could buy it from me, you could buy it from another farmer. Maybe you'd find grass-fed beef at a store, but it's unlikely. Today, you can find it at Publix or Kroger or wherever, but you can also find it from Crowd Cow, Butcher Box, or a lot of online alternatives and replacements that didn't exist then. So you got to think about, well, what could come down the road that could put competitive pressure on me? And the other thing you got to think about with competition is, do I have any, what are my pressure points coming? And I gave an example in the book about how I described a dairy farm that got killed because it put itself in a very bad competitive, you know, position. And this was the farm that we bought in Georgia before we started farming. Mm-hmm. And they got killed because they had no control over their feed cost in the dairy business. Feed costs went up and they couldn't do anything about it. But on the other side of the equation, they had no control over what they could charge because they sold through a milk co-op. They got paid whatever the co-op said they, you know, would get paid. And the co-op, like most dairy co-op contracts, wouldn't let them sell directly to customers. So they couldn't stimulate demand and they couldn't increase prices. And for this particular dairy farm, a lot of times milk prices plummeted when feed prices increased. So These guys got squeezed. So when you go to choose your products and your revenue streams in box three, you have to be asking yourself these questions. What are my cost factors? Am I really dependent on feed or seed or something that could become unavailable? Last year, a lot of people couldn't get seeds, for example.
Yeah.
You know, so are there things that could happen like that, that I have no control over that could really kill my business? Or, for example, let's say that your go-to-market model or in channels is you're selling directly to restaurants. Could you imagine something like, the government decides to lock down and then all restaurants are closed and now you don't have any business? So what alternatives do you have? If you haven't cultivated a direct customer base, then at least be aware in advance that you have a risk factor there. So that's what that box is about in cost structure. It's not just about knowing your cost. It's also about assessing your competitive risk.
That was actually one of the questions that I wrote down when I went through the one-page book, was specifically about that dairy, because I think it's such a wonderful example. I'm from Wisconsin. I mean, I unfortunately have heard this story too many times, and it always makes me a little sad when I see farmers going into that situation willingly, because they aren't sitting down and thinking through this situation beforehand.
You know, it's such a sad story. And I've talked about this before, and I've had people get mad at me and say things to me like, you don't understand the dairy industry and how heartbreaking this is. It's like, I wrote this story because I completely understand how heartbreaking this is. I know the people. It's terrible, but it's preventable. Mm-hmm. The reason, you know, look, I'm not taking sides here. I'm only explaining what happened. And in that case, I just explained, here are the facts. The guy had no control over his input cost, the feed cost, and he had no control or influence over his customers and what he could charge. Those are the facts, and that's a very bad squeeze that you're setting yourself up for. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't take that risk. There's times that you might take that risk. For example, maybe you inherited a dairy farm. Maybe you have no capital cost. Maybe this is what you know. Maybe you want to continue that lifestyle. Maybe you think it's a life worth preserving and all these kind of things. That's fine. But they need to be conscious decisions, which is really at the heart of what I try to talk about in all my work. So, you know, when I get to box five is about the cost structure, box six is about competition. That's what I'm talking about on those boxes, is understanding your cost and understanding what the competitive forces are so that you can then arrive at, you know, what the right choice is for you. The idea, you know, Terrence, behind this one-page plan is that you basically drip down to a logical plan for you, a logical set of choices. When you get to box seven is going to be your critical success factors. So now you've gone through, I've got my vision, I know my customer segments, I know my products, I know my channels, I know my costs, I know my competition and competitive forces. Now, what keeps me up at night? What are my critical success factors? And this isn't where you get nitpicky. This is where you think about the big things. Here's what it could be. For example, where will I get the money to start this business? Or get the land or whatever. Or it could be, let's say that you're going to make cheese. How will I learn to make cheese and how will I earn recognition? Or it could be, if you're in the pastured meat business, how will I be able to secure relationships with meat processors that I know I will have them when I need them to take my product to market? Because this killed a lot of farmers in 2020 with COVID. You know, they would have grass-fed beef ready to go and all of a sudden you can't get a processor appointment for a year.
Yeah.
Well, you expected money to come in and now you got to wait another 6 or 9 months. I mean, that hurts. Mm-hmm. So in the critical success factors, you know, box, it's where you list the two or three things that are the most important. And what I told people in the book is, I'll go ahead and tell you what the number one most important thing is. This is going to be for everybody. The number one most important thing is positive cash flow. This is your most important critical success factor. And in the book, I gave an example. I gave several examples, but I gave one example of how you can get killed with cash flow, even if you're running a high growth, profitable business.
I love this thinking because, so I have a background in critical control points and HACCP. So basically it's hazard analysis. It's looking at, this is what the flow of a process is. And right. Here are the places and moments where that flow is at risk of something bad happening. What you're doing is kind of inverting it to a degree. You're not looking at a critical control point necessarily as this is where the hazard is, but this is where, this is the point where you can achieve greater success. This is where you have the opportunity. This is where you're going to get traction.
I think it's a great way to think about it. I think it actually is inverting it. I mean, basically, I'm taking through a logical sequence to get there. But at the end, you do have to answer that question. Okay, now that I understand all these other reasons, what is critical for me to achieve and accomplish? And it's going to then lead into the last box, box number eight, which is, okay, I've identified the three or four critical success factors. What are my key performance goals? How do I turn those factors into actionable, assignable goals so that I can mitigate the risk and actually achieve success? This is, you know, back in the old days when, you know, in corporate America, I would create every year, I'd have to create a 150, 170 page strategic plan process that goes through more things than you'd ever want to imagine. But one of the things that was useful out of that is I would go through and think through, okay, I know my goals here. I've got to create a timeline. When am I going to start this? Who's accountable for this? What resources are required? How am I going to actually achieve this thing that I said is so important to me? I don't suggest that all farmers don't do this, Terrence, to go back to your very original question of why did I create this, but I find that most people just go about their day. They wake up in the morning and, well, I got to do my chores. I got to weed, seed, feed, breed. I got to do these kind of things without thinking about, or if they're a baker, they got a need, you know, but I got to do these kind of things without thinking through, wait a minute, what are my key performance goals? What is strategically important that I should be working on? Maybe it's, I need to get new restaurant clients. Maybe it's, I need to make a choice about whether shipping is right for my meat business or not. And I make some cases in the book about why I think shipping for a lot of people, particularly in the pastured meat business, is a poor choice. And I only say that because right now so many people are hot and bothered about shipping, and I got to add shipping because they see other people doing shipping and yet they haven't penetrated their existing market. So they just add shipping to get into a new market. And it's often not the right choice. But whether it's the right choice or not isn't my point. The point is that you think about it strategically and you go through this process.
What I love about this whole process, this whole strategic planning process, is that, believe it or not, this interview came at like a perfect time for me because here I am at beginning of my work season and I'm sitting down and I'm trying to think through, okay, what do I want this year to look like? What are the goals I'm trying to reach? And I'm sitting down and going over like my version of my strategic plan. And then this opportunity comes up to talk to you about this. I'm like, oh, perfect. This is not synchronicity. What's the word I'm looking for? This is synergy. Oh, there we go. Oh, synergizing. Yeah,
synergistic.
This is synergistic.
Well, and if you love, go ahead.
What you're doing is you're asking farmers to step back when most farmers are nothing but reactive. You're asking them to be proactive and think through conscious choices instead of being forced into those choices when their back is against the wall.
Yeah, and I do say that, and I hate to say that because it makes it sound like I'm stereotyping people in the farming industry, like, well, they're all reacting like this. And I don't mean it that way. It's just that most people I observe have been like that. And it's just inherent in the nature of farming. All businesses, when you're an entrepreneur, every business is consuming. Mm-hmm. No business is more consuming than farming. Because farming, you know, you're doing all the chores, you're the jack of all trades, you're doing all the work. And a lot of people will listen to this and go, yeah, that sounds great, Tim. When am I going to have the time to sit down and do any of this? And I get it. But my point is, if you don't have the time, what that's telling you is you have a problem with your business model. Now, you've got to have a business that allows you as the owner, the entrepreneur, to have the time to sit down and think strategically about your business.
Well, and you make a really good point throughout your book that with farming, the unique thing is that it becomes so entwined with your personal life and that right. It makes it really hard to step back sometimes. because it's not the same as clocking in and out of a 9-to-5 job where you can then just, I'm not part of this anymore. I don't have to think about it. Your mind is still racing with, well, this needs to be done tomorrow. I have to do this then. And I would argue that that's actually the attitude most of people exist in, not just farming. Farming just brings it more to the center because you're constantly around it.
Yeah, I actually think that that's the reason why strategic planning and marketing planning and business planning for farming is more important. We all love this lifestyle so much. We all want to be with our family so much that it's more imperative that we make sure this works. Because if we don't treat this right from a business point of view, we're either going to continue funding this business through, you know, off-farm income and stuff like that, which none of us really want to do that. I meet very few farmers who say, I really would like to keep the farm going, but I want to stay over here and work on this other job more. Most people would really rather be more immersed in this lifestyle. If that's what you want for the long term, if that's what you want for your family and your community, then it's more important to think about how you're going to make this financially successful. And you should aspire. I mean, I'm talking to farmers here. Farmers should aspire to earn nice white collar incomes. Their contributions to the community are very important. It's equally as important as any doctor, or lawyer, or any other professional, what they're doing out there. But the way you're going to get that financial achievement is through structuring a business that can achieve it.
So one of the final questions I had here for you is, because I've grown up on the farm, I know the farming experience here. What would be your recommendation to farmers who they sit through this, they love this idea, they sit down, they go through their strategic plan, they fill out the page, it gets set on the desk, and then other papers get put on top of it?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, at some point, I got to push back to the farmer and say, look, that's your problem, dude. You need to exercise some discipline and recognize what's important. And what's important is a plan for your business. And I think I did say that in this book. I'm a little confused if I did, Terrence, because I wrote another book that's coming out this month also.
Oh, and congratulations. It's called
I knocked out two books this winter. The other book is called The One-Page Marketing Plan. And in that book, you know, one of the things I say in all my books is, look, if you run any kind of business, this is applicable to you. But in all my books, I really tailor them to farming. And in The One-Page Marketing Plan, I walk people through a one-page plan about how to plan I gave an example of a CSA vegetable farm. And I walk through how to create a step-by-step marketing plan to do that. But I don't know if I said it in that book or in this book here, but the beautiful thing about one-page plans and the reason I create them is it's so easy to pin that above your computer or put it on your refrigerator or whatever, and you can see it all the time, and it can remind you of what you're doing. But it also lets other people, significant others, or if you have professionals in your network like CPAs or lawyers or whatnot, or you know, banks or lenders, they can see on one page what you're trying to do and how you're going to be successful. You've got to keep it there. You know, you've got to keep it front and center, and you've got to modify it as you need to modify it to keep it alive. That's what I don't like about the typical boilerplate 50-page, you know, business plans that you see online, because they're not actionable. Nobody ever modifies those. They throw them in a drawer, put them in the compost pile or whatever, and nobody ever uses them. But on a one-page plan, you can see it and you can do that.
Well, and that's a point that you make that I really liked in the book, is that this is something that can change as time goes on, because the farm itself adapts.
Think about COVID last year. Mm-hmm. Things happen like that will make a change.
Instantly.
Right.
Tim, this has been an amazing conversation. I actually want to make a quick caveat here, because we talked about this before. If you don't have time to sit down and read this, Tim has done an audiobook version of it.
That's true. Yeah.
So if you are working on farm tours, you could just pop your earbuds in and listen to this.
Yeah. I recorded the Audible version last week. Now Audible, and they have it, Audible, unlike, Amazon, when you publish books, or Kobo and Barnes and Noble, usually you can get the books online in a few days. Audible is like, you know, perpetually like a 45-60 day backlog. But most of my books that I write, I've written a number of books, most of them are available on Audible as well. So, and I listen to a ton of Audible books, so that is a good way to do it.
It is my favorite way to consume information, is through audio. Yeah. I mean, shocking. Yeah. I do a podcast. Tim, This has been an amazing conversation. Where can people go to learn more about you and your work?
Two places. I mean, if people are interested in the farming side of what I do, just go to smallfarmnation.com and you can find all the work I do there to help farmers. If you're just interested in what I do and my writing and stuff, you can go to authortimyoung.com.
Thank you so much, Tim, for joining us on the show today.
It is a pleasure, Terrence. Keep up the great work.
Big thanks to Tim for joining us on the show today. always an incredible conversation. You can learn more about Tim and his work by going to his website, smallfarmnation.com, and by checking out the links to his work in our show notes at intellectualagrarian.com/young21. And that's the number 21, by the way. If you are new to the show, please subscribe on whatever your favorite podcast player of choice is. While you are there, please leave us a 5-star rating and review, especially on Apple Podcasts. This has been Terrence Lahue and the Intellectual Agrarian Podcast, reminding you to keep farming the dream.